Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Hello everyone and welcome to the media show from the British Tech Network. The revised show, a new panel style, and joining me on this show every week, hopefully, as long as his mum lets him out to play, will be Mr. Russ Cluett. How are you doing, Russ?
I'm well, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. And how do you feel about joining me as my partner in crime in this new field?
I'm very pleased to be here. It's going to be fun, I hope, as long as you don't make any more cracks.
Cracks.
I do what I like.
Are you going to talk like a robot for the whole show?
No, I'm not. No. Okay.
Also, another partner in crime of mine is Mr. Alex Fox from the Photo Show. How are you doing, sir?
I'm very well. This is not the photo show, then.
No. Did I get you to the wrong one?
Right. Okay. I know everything about Scare Electrics.
Scare Electrics. Close. Thank you for that. Thanks for joining. And rounding out our panel this week, we have my yet another partner in crime, Missy. How are you doing?
Hello, Carl. I'm wonderful. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's okay. I just thought I'd get a nice group of friends around me for the first show. Because I know you all, like, don't take a mickey or anything.
It's always good to start with your mates.
Indeed. So what we're going to talk about on the media show, we're going to deal with things all new media. So things like streaming video and the news relating to that and Blu-rays and DVDs and movies and TV shows, the whole gamut. And we'll start off with the news this week. Apparently, finally, MEPs have rejected the actor piracy treaty. Now, Actor, just in case anyone doesn't know, was created as an aims to protect intellectual property in both digital and physical goods, and has proven diversive because it was negotiated largely in secret. Now, a 19-12 vote against the treaty is widely expected to mean the full European Parliament will now accept the committee's recommendation and vote against this treaty in come July. Has anyone read about this today? Is anyone surprised that they said, we're not having this, it's ridiculous?
Well, quite plainly, it is ridiculous. 19-12 people say so.
Now, one of the parts of it is one of the early rumours that was suggested that a clause in it was that iPods would be allowed to be examined at international borders for pirated music.
Yeah, I mean, do you know what this strikes me? And let's start off by alienating a quarter of the panel and about 70% of our listenership. It sounds like a US-centric idea. You know, one of the things... Yes, exactly. But we have something called civil rights here, and human rights even, and we are signed up to it. And what it basically says is you can't just basically accuse everyone of being guilty of something unless you've actually got proof. And the idea that you can just go through an airport and somebody that's had an argument with a wife can just make your life even more miserable than they can already with a rubber glove by going through your iPod is just ridiculous to us. You know, if you've got reason to believe somebody's done something wrong, then throw the book at them, do what you like with them, but don't try and give the whole world a hard time just because somebody might people with loads and loads and loads and loads of money might lose a tiny little bit of it. You know, it doesn't work like that in Europe, and long may it stay the same.
I mean as 25%, is that right? Yes, of this panel, you know, there are a lot of us Yanks that don't agree with that either. I mean, it's taking power to the extreme, like Alex said, so that people who, you know, heaven forbid you lose a little bit of money on this. If you suspect it, great. But to go out of your way to check on that, I mean, that doesn't sit well with, you know, I know this is a, you know, British, a UK thing, but that doesn't sit well. I mean, we've got a lot of the same kinds of things happening here. And trust me, I speak for a lot of people when I say it doesn't go over well with a lot of us either.
Yeah.
All right. Russ?
Yeah, I'm just looking at this this piece again because the whole thing about having your iPod examined at the border, that's just a rumor. And to be totally honest, I don't think they would have dared tried it.
No, but do you reckon it's one of those things where they went in heavy, knowing that they'd get beaten back?
Maybe, I don't know. The problem is you've got that every time they've tried something like this, everybody the internet has always fought back, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So whether any of it would have got through or not, it's difficult to say. I mean, it's the 19-12 is very close.
Well, I imagine. I mean, knowing the European Parliament, and again, I'm about to accuse half of Europe of not having the same morals as the other half, but Eastern Europe tends to be slightly more supportive of, shall we say, downloading content for free than Western Europe, and so. We have a very, you know, that's the trouble. I mean, 10 years ago in Europe, it used to be a lot of very similar countries. So I would have said 10 years ago, this would have got through. But things have changed dramatically since then. And it's a bit like the Eurovision Song Contest. People vote for what they see as would be advantageous to them rather than as a whole. But, you know, I mean, I think this brings up the bigger point of what can be done to sort of stop people stealing things, and one of the main things that can be done is to make things a price where, you know, the majority of people could afford to look at it legally.
Hmm.
You know, maybe they want to work on the basis of selling 10 times more at a tenth of the price, and then maybe they wouldn't have so much to worry about in the copyright infringements.
That's what everybody wants them to do, though, isn't it? We want better circulation of content for less money.
But don't you think the modern systems allow that to happen? There's no need for logistics anymore, apart from servers.
No, because we're still stuck. Sorry, Alex. We're still stuck in that situation where you've got content providers on the one side who need to sell to old media, and you can't they need to sell to those because people still watch television, and the deals that they have with content delivery networks, like, you know, networks in the States or wherever, because you still have to do that. They say, right, okay, well we're paying X amount for this, that means you can't sell it to them.
No, I understand that, but the whole point is, who else is going to buy it? I mean, we are the end consumer. Right, the public. Joe Public is the end consumer. No matter how we get it, it's aimed at us in the end. All the layers of business in between us and the original content are just hurdles. And if you've got people who are saying, well, okay, if we're buying this service off you, if we're buying these shows off you for the X amount of money, you can't show them to anyone else. So they could turn around and say, well, okay, we are going to sell them to other people, but we're not going to charge you as much if you also want to buy them, because no one is ever... The whole world is never always going to be on the internet at a single time watching all their content online. There's always going to be people that are still watching it through old media streams, so to speak. There's always going to be people who want to go to the cinema. There's always going to be people who want to sit down in an evening and watch telly and just turn it on. Whatever comes up next, that's what they're watching.
Hmm. You've bested me with your unassailable logic there, but this is going to be a problem for a while, and we're going to have to fight off a lot more things like ACTA before it starts to get better.
Yeah,
but maybe with things moving away from normal broadcast television to the download content or pay per view or subscription based, then part of your subscription could be, I want 24 hours worth of movies a month or whatever it is. So like you used to buy with your ball brand, you buy a package of an amount. And so you buy, oh, let's say 50 hours of movies a month, and you get 50 hours of movies, and that then gets split between the movies you've watched, and do it that way. Like a pay-per-view per movie, but you I mean, a lot of people are moving away from watching a TV channel that's selling a film or showing a film, and that TV channel won't necessarily have to pay X amount of money for the film. They will pay X amount of money for the amount of people that actually watch that film. So they'll sell it to consumer plus 10%, and then they'll pay the movie company what they made minus 10%, like a commission.
Well, can I still have... Sorry, Carl, go on.
I was going to say, just before we move on to the next story, I just want to ask a general question. Okay, before, how much percentage would you say you used to watch TV before the internet became like viable entertainment in your eyes?
How do you mean?
I mean, you'd come in. I mean, how much time a week on average would you say you watch telly in the old days, we'll call them?
Not much.
No?
I watched Star Trek, and that's about it.
Right, okay, fair enough. Alex, what about you and your...
When I was growing up, it was like a family thing to do, was watch TV.
Yeah.
It was a Saturday afternoon. We got to watch the kiddie stuff. And the Saturday evening, we had to sit there and watch what my parents wanted, and maybe a couple of hours each evening during the week if you'd done your homework. But, you know, something I've mentioned before, the world is splitting off. Families aren't being able to interact in the same way as they used to because of the entertainment is all personal. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for me, I watch virtually nothing anymore.
Off TV, regular TV.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm watching less and less of all sorts of things. Okay. I've actually taken to streaming old series of things so I can watch maybe one or two episodes a week while I'm in bed, and that's it. I mean, if you saw the amount of money I pay every month for entertainment to be piped into this house and the lack of use it gets, you'd think I was a bit of a mug, more than you do already.
And Missy, how's your viewing habits changed over the years?
Oh, it's the same thing. I think there's, you know, once my children got beyond the Disney Channel and Nick Jr. ages, you know, was there really anything good for them on? I think but as a family, you know, when I was younger, I'm not going to say how old I am, but when I was younger, there was a lot of family shows. There were a lot of them. I mean, it was from Carol Burnett, and we could all sit down and watch it. We couldn't do that now. And I've learned that, you know, as my children grew, there was nothing we could sit down and watch as a family. So, you know, when VHS came out and DVD, we started to scale back what we watched on TV. And now if we watch anything together, it is definitely a series. Well, that's not true. We do. I have Comcast cable here in the States for The Walking Dead on AMC. That's really the only reason I have Comcast. And I know I can watch it online, but it's the only thing we watch as a family. Everything else is either iTunes or Netflix, all streamed through the Xbox. And that's how we watch it. So it's kind of silly. I'm with Alex. Why do I pay for this? I pay for it for one show. I know that's dumb, but I kind of do.
The Holy Grail is a la carte TV, isn't it? You choose what you want, and you pay what you need to, you know, you pay what you owe.
Right. It makes perfect sense. But sense.
The providers don't want you to do that, though, do they? Because they want to make loads of money off you.
You're not going to be able to stop that. I mean, I sat in a few months ago on a web panel that was discussing web series and how they are so rapidly. I have a good friend who has a very, very popular web series, funnier than anything I've seen on TV. And
you want to plug it, Missy?
It's called Enter the Dojo. And you really, it's take the office, take a macho martial arts guy who has a made-up martial arts called Ameridote, best of all, worst of none, and put it in a dojo with a just crazy cast. And when you watch things like this and you see the potential, you think to yourself, I mean, that is the wave. That is where it's going. And I think that the internet providers now, that you just can't deny it. I mean, you just can't deny it. And we see that as our bills kind of go up and up and up as you know, fewer people are just, for example, with Comcast, you know, they're purchasing their internet services, but they're not purchasing their cable services. Mm-hmm. So, I don't think you're going to be able to stop that. There's just no way until, no, there's no way.
I totally agree. I mean, my old habits were I'd come in from school or when you know, work when I was a bit younger and plop down in front of the telly and I'd be there all night. I don't watch hardly anything live on TV now.
That was gonna be my next point, actually. I don't watch anything live. I don't. Sometimes I don't even watch the F1 live.
Exactly. So I'm just saying, like this changing. It's changed. It's already changed. I mean, okay, we might not be the demographic, the average demographic, because of, you know, the realm we're involved in, but it's growing. I know less and less people that watch just will say regular programming.
You'll always have your soap operas.
Oh yes. Well, moving on, we got Netflix have urged further UK review of B Sky B's dominance on pay TV movies. They have asked the UK Competition Commission to reconsider its recently stated view that British pay TV giant B Sky B doesn't have a dominant position in the area of movies on pay TV anymore. They're claiming that B Sky B no longer has the advantage over competitors in terms of its pay TV movie offerings amid the rise of streaming video providers like Love Film, which is owned by Amazon, and the likes of Netflix. However, I mean, these companies don't really offer on their streaming thing the kind of top-grade movies that Sky have been offering. So I can't see how they're saying they haven't got a monopoly when they obviously have, in my opinion.
Yeah, but they're right in way of saying that they haven't got monopolies in respect of they pay a premium price for the premium movie, mm-hmm. you know, and the Netflix and this sort of people, as much as they like to say that they're big hitters, you're not going to get Netflix for £5.99 a month if you're going to get the same level of blockbuster, or rather the same release date of blockbusters that B Sky B have got. I did notice something. I've only recently started using Netflix due to the fact that I'm being paid to do it. And
Not by us.
I'm completely independent when it comes to this network. I did notice, for instance, the films that are on the kids' menu, if you like, on Netflix. I take my son, or my wife takes my youngest son to the cinema, Picture House, every Saturday morning. And they've got like a kids club thing, and it's like £1 per movie, and we actually get it for 90p because if you join up you get 10% off. It's all rather embarrassing, really. But I noticed that it's exactly the same films that you get on Netflix. So what I'm trying to say is like a level of film you can buy, and B Sky B, I think they pay price A. They pay the top whack for the newest films because they're going to be released first, and I think they pay way over the odds. Then you've got level B, which is where Netflix, and it's also where the TV programs are shown. It's a level B price. They are paying for things. And I mean, I'm not saying service is level B, but the date of release and the blockbuster or the relevance to today, etc., they're paying a different price. And Netflix and the cinema and various other TV streaming places you can get, there's a couple around and a couple have just gone, they're level B and they're all showing the same things. So, I mean, what I'm saying is, I mean, not a great lover of the Murdoch empire, but what I'm saying is they are paying over the odds to have that advantage. And if I'm sure if Netflix wants to come up with four times the amount of money they already pay, then I'm sure the companies would agree to give it to them, but they're not going to be able to charge £5.99 if that's what they want to get involved in.
Well, Sky Movies has also got more people watching it
today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's you know,
that's all film companies are concerned with. How many people are going to be watching their films that are coming out now? How many people are going to be watching them today?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, their argument, seeing Netflix argument, his submission seems to be that they say competing against B Sky B for content, they're trying to, but none of the incumbent competitors currently have meaningful access to films in early subscription TV windows. Sky should not be permitted to continue to monopolise the acquisition of these rights from the studios and to foreclose access to these rights for its competitors by the conclusion of exclusive licensing arrangements. So what they're moaning about, the fact is I think from what I understand here, is they're complaining about Sky signing exclusives and they're being allowed to sign exclusives.
Yeah, but sure, but it's like the football rights. You sign exclusives because you buy 3 years of exclusivity. It doesn't work that you buy exclusivity from now to the year dot. So what happened is SkyB will have a right to say, we want exclusivity for this film and it can't be shown on any other network for X amount of time. But when Netflix, Lovefilm and all the others say, okay, right, it's like exactly like the football rights. SkyPay offered four times more than anyone had ever offered to show the Premier League football. So they got it. Some of the other players are now coming in saying, okay, we'll buy a bit of that. We'll have the highlights. We'll have this, that and the other. But if these other companies come in and they say, no, I'm going to offer more than Sky once their exclusivity time period is up, then they'll get it. You know, it's like it's like the first part of a, not even a legal battle, it's the first part of a battle. You've got to let it be known that you might actually be interested in the future, in the fact that if these rights come up, bear in mind that we might make an offer. You know, it's just the first foot in the door to say, you know, we want to be a part of this. So, you know, bear us in mind next time it comes around.
Mm-hmm. Missy, over there in the States, how long does it take Netflix to get, we'll say, like a newish film?
You kind of forget about the film by the time they get it. Okay. Oh, that's right. That came out. Yeah, it takes a long time. Of course, it's quicker if you're going to, I mean, streaming video, it takes forever. I mean, literally. Oh, you know what they just came out with was, which I was surprised, was Thor. And that was just a couple weeks ago. Thor hit watch instantly. And I really didn't want to, but that was, and that was the big thing, was Thor was out. It takes forever. And I think the more popular the film, the longer it takes. You can get it quicker on, when they release it on DVD, of course, they release it, you know, to your mailbox. Mm. But it takes months and months and months and months.
So it's not just outside the Atlantic?
No. I think it's a Netflix thing.
But bearing in mind, remember that some of us aren't necessarily that fussed about things that are being released in the cinema at the moment or stuff. I mean, I'm looking through Netflix today, and I'm going to admit it in front of, you know, two men and a lady, that I watched because of, I really enjoyed the first time I saw it years ago, Chocolat. I mean, it has got something to do with the look of a couple of the ladies in the film. But it's, to me, Netflix to me is my classical repository. It's the films that I don't want to have to go and either buy the DVD or look on the shelf for. Mm-hmm. I love my classic, you know, 40s, 50s and 60s movies. I love that. If I could pay £10 a month for a service that had everything made between 1970, that would be it. I mean, I might go to the cinema to watch a new film, but I'd be really happy living in my, you know, my romantic dotage. So, you know, for people like me, and there must be someone else like me out there, the fact that their back catalogue is so extensive for things that, you know, may have been left behind. And there's some amazing, I mean, I've just been introducing my children to black and white movies. And, you know, at first they were, you know, dragged kicking and streaming into the room to watch the TV. But now I've sort of pointed out, you know, there is a point to making a movie that is based basically on script and good acting, as opposed to making a movie based on loud bangs, silly costumes and loads of pyrotechnics. And they're slowly but surely sort of going in. I occasionally see them watching something that if their friends knew they were watching, they'd probably be laughed out of school. So there is something to be said for these movies that, you know, Netflix and various other people give you for $5.99 a month.
Well, I'm happy because they got my favourite movie of all time on there, The Godfather, on Netflix at the moment.
And when was that made?
So late 70s, wasn't it?
See, we don't have that in the States, Carl. I sit at my computer all day long and I do photo editing and in fact, I looked for it. I was like, please, please, God, let there be Goodfellas or any of the Godfathers, even three, I don't care. And none of them were on. None of them. So see, that's, you've got it and we don't.
You need to get in touch with that Reed Hastings and tell him to get it on over there.
Yeah, darn straight.
It's probably to do with more to do with the guys that pick up your garbage.
What?
Well, you know, I'd imagine the Godfather might actually be, you know, under the jurisdiction of the Cosa Nostra or something. No, maybe that's the problem.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. We are about to get here in the UK in July. Finally, after much promised over a year ago, Google TV, Sony's new NCZGS7 internet player and NSZGP9 Blu-ray player are bringing apps, internet video streams and browsing to the British living rooms in July. Google have partnered with Sony to launch these two media players. They were first shown off at CES in January, and they're going to be priced at £200 and £280 respectively. You can get Android apps on them, full internet browsing capabilities and live streams. Now, has anyone had a chance to look at what Google TV is? Now, I'm guessing the only person in the room who should have had the opportunity, if anyone, is going to be Missy, because they've been active over there for some time.
Yeah, Carl, not until I opened the show docs did I go, Google what? Google TV? Oh. What? What the what? No, I you know, I think I'm, as was pointed out before the show, a pretty average American. Oh. And, oh, yeah, that's right. But I had, it wasn't even on the radar of possibilities. You know, I know you can get it on some TVs. I've heard that, but built in. But that's all I know. It's not an option for an average American like me.
Well, I did run into some trouble when they originally released over in the States, because what the intention was this: you could search on your TV various internet streaming things like Hulu and the Amazon one, Netflix and whoever. Amazon, sorry, because you got Amazon streaming over there. And these companies detected that you were using the Google TV browser and just blocked it.
Mm.
So you couldn't even use it for its genuine purpose. So it was crazy.
How long till that happens with Love Film, do you think?
Well, so that's the thing. We don't know, because they're just partnering with Sony. It's up to them. They've produced the hardware. When it comes to the streaming software, that'll be down to the media content people.
I suppose, yeah, Love Film will have they'll have an application for it.
Now, the thing I'm looking for, personally, what I'm looking forward to is when Mountain Lion comes out and you can AirPlay your Mac screen directly to your TV through Apple TV. And that is, as far as I know, just showing up as Safari, so that would be much harder to block in those circumstances. So you could like go full screen on some internet sharing streaming service, and they will not be able to tell that you're watching it on your TV, as far as I'm aware. I could be wrong about that.
As far as we know so far, yes, there's not going to be any kind of restriction on what you can AirPlay. But There is something built into iOS 10 where if you're watching a DVD or something and you take a screenshot, the DVD comes out black.
I've never tried it.
It might be with a protected one. It doesn't with non-protected.
It's with a HDCP protected content.
Yeah.
You take a screenshot, it comes out black. Now I'm just wondering if there will be something that, if there's a little flag that people can put on their content that says, no, this is protected, don't let this stream to a secondary display.
Well, possibly, we'll have to wait and see, but that wouldn't be an Apple's advantage, would it? Because, like they say, they detected, because the way Google reported what browser it was, you know, because they can use that for, is it CCS? what's the acronym that makes up the content for a website, the design?
CSS.
Right, yeah.
CSS. What's the CSS got to do with it?
No, because I believe it would report in what the browser was somewhere.
Yeah, the header on the browser.
Yeah, the header.
Yeah.
Right. And that was where they were pulling it from. When they saw it was an Android TV, a Google TV, they were just clamping down on that browser.
Yeah, again, I would have said it probably something that they wouldn't be able to get away with so easily in Europe, though.
Yeah, we've got a bit more... we clamp down on things like that in Europe, don't we?
Yeah, because it's a monopoly and, you know, we don't do monopolies. But, I mean, to be honest, what difference does it make? Because if you think, I mean, rightly so, I'm sure. You're really excited about being able to use your 27-inch screen on your 28-inch TV, but of lesser quality. But I'm glad you're really excited about that. But what's to stop you sticking a wire out the back of your Mac and sticking it into a TV? Well, I mean, would that affect the streaming in any way?
No, you can do that. You can like share, have it as a second monitor.
Yeah, so
that works now.
Sort of the point I was trying to make is, what's the difference?
Well, because this is aimed at the average consumer. What you're doing might probably be beyond what the average consumer would know how to do. I'm not saying that's specifically the case. But...
I appreciate that, but you know, the point is that this box, like the iPlayer, doesn't actually contain anything in itself. The way I can see this working is Google will have applications from LoveFilm, etc., and Netflix, whoever it happens to be, and it will just be another physical piece of hardware that will allow you via Wi-Fi or Ethernet or whatever you're plugged into to be able to transfer that into a usable signal which will HDMI into your screen. So they're not, in the funny way, they're not actually designed, it's not designed in any way to hijack anyone else's facility, for instance, iPlayer or streaming through that. If Apple don't want them to have anything that comes via an Apple server, well, fine. Yeah. There's plenty of other methods and ways to do it. I'm quite glad that Google have partnered with Sony and not gone to, a lesser known brand, because of there's enough people out there that would see it said Sony and go, you know what, it's made by Sony, I trust it, I like it, or whatever it may be. Oh, it's powered by Google. I think Google has done a very clever thing here to go for a name which in entertainment is far more powerful than theirs. I just wish they'd stop with these really memorable names like the NSZ GP9.
Yes,
I mean, the one thing you can say about the Apple, you've got Apple TV, you've got version 1 and version 2.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Come out with something snappy, call it Google TV 1, Google TV Blu-ray. You know, that's all you need. You don't need to give it the Sony-branded, God knows what they're talking about, label on it.
So quick question, who's planning on pick one of these up in July?
No.
Don't need one.
No? Okay. I might go for the 200 one just to give it a go and then... buy it through Amazon, and then you can always send it back.
Google isn't the Google TV software open source, so you can put it on anything?
Maybe if it's based on Android, I don't know what it's...
It is based on Android.
There you
it?
Go. It probably is.
I want it on my
Switch. The interface, isn't it? That's the issue that they have to design.
You want it on your what, Alex?
I want it on my fridge. If you can put it anywhere, I want it on my fridge.
I thought you said your face.
That as well.
Now, over here as well in UK, LoveFilm has struck a deal with 20th Century Fox for a multi-year distribution of its movies. LoveFilm members will have instant exclusive on-demand access to what is known as second pay television window of 20th Century Fox film content. This film deal will allow titles released in the theatres from 2011... to be made available to LoveFilm subscribers from March 2013. So that's only early next year. They've also taken on the TV titles, a back catalogue of such thing shows as Sons of Anarchy, All Seasons of 24, Prison Break, Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel. This is probably not an exclusive deal because I think Netflix already has 24 and Prison Break on it.
They do.
So,
but they don't have these. I mean, these are going to be newer films, aren't they? These are going to be films from 2011, aren't they?
Well, in 2013, these are going to be out, and there will be stuff released in 2011.
Oh,
that's what I'm saying.
Right. So, Prometheus coming to LoveFilm streaming in 2014, then?
Yeah, basically. But we'll get to Prometheus later in our spoiler section. Still, I mean, it's a move, it's a step in the right direction. All the stuff we've been saying earlier on, it's still a step in the right direction. I'd rather have, to me, it's the back catalogue that becomes the more valuable thing. The more you can add from my past that I can go back and watch anytime I want to see it, that for me is the value rather than the newer content.
Mm.
Also stops people wanting to steal it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, are you going to have B Sky B jumping up and down saying, I don't like this, Love Films have got an exclusivity contract on the... You know, it swings and roundabouts, mate. Don't start complaining about it and then be hypocritical and doing it yourself.
That was Netflix complaining, this is Love Film.
Yeah, exactly. They're not jumping up. No, the thing is, like, they're doing exactly... I love being right. They're doing exactly what I was talking about. They're coming into the market and saying, oh, we're going to throw a bit of money at this. We're going to stop the TV companies having exclusivity. We'll take some ourselves. Right, they've started on stuff that's 2 years old, and when the old contracts are done, they'll go for the newer things, but you will be paying a different subscriber rate. Mm. You'll have one rate for the service you're used to, another rate if you want to go high-end, highbrow. You know, that's what you got to do. But, you know, my only worry, and it is a worry because of some of the things I've been testing lately, is right at the moment, I mean, Missy mentioned that she uses the Xbox to stream all her stuff. At the moment, for reasons I won't go into, I have virtually everything that you could possibly stream via the Xbox as a test. And I've got to be honest, I absolutely don't like it very much. I can't say much more on that. But the thing is, it's because of nothing. It might be on one box, but it might as well be in 17 different places because of, you know, oh, I want to watch that film. It's on that service. I want to watch that. Oh, it's on that service. I want to watch that. Oh, no, that's part of that package. To me, the whole thing is just splitting it all up. You know, what I really want is a provider, and I can click a box and say, I want this package, and this package. They go ahead and get it all into one lovely UI where I've just got a great long list of what I want to see, or, you know, however I want to search for it or view it or go through lists of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't mind if it's got a little Love Film sticker next to it or a Netflix sticker or a B Sky. I don't care. I just want one UI where my provider goes and sorts all this nonsense out for me. I mean, that would be great, this Google box. What I want is, I don't want a Love Film app. I don't want a Netflix app. I don't want a Sky app. I don't want a this app or that app. I want a list. All I do is tell it where I want them to get my stuff from and then just sort it out so it's lovely and good and gorgeous for me. That's my objection.
You don't want much, do you, Alex?
I think, to be honest, the thing that you were talking about, Alex, all these films that have been lumped into different companies' apps, yeah. I think that's just something we're going to have to live with. Mm. Until somebody comes along to say, right, we've got deals with absolutely everyone, and it's going to cost you £40 a month.
Missy, in the States, because Love Film is basically our Amazon streaming over here. So do you notice much difference between what Amazon streaming has to offer and what Netflix has to offer? I mean, are you in a position to have them both?
Carl, I'm sure I am, but I don't stream anything through Amazon. I don't.
Fair enough.
You can have them both.
I can't what?
You can have them both.
Right. But I don't. And I think it's because Netflix has done such a fabulous job really here in the States when it comes to marketing. And Amazon, I mean, I'm a huge Amazon user. But I don't use it to stream anything. I don't use it to watch anything. I just use it as an online bookstore. And so I think that they have a ways to go, at least here, to really be – none of my friends, nobody I know will stream anything through Amazon or watch it on Amazon. So I think they have a ways to go before they're known for that here.
Okay. Well, maybe something that will make them more well-known – is apparently Amazon is going to get into the content creation business. They're going to take on Netflix and Hulu and traditional other TV companies in creating its own slate of original TV shows, starting with one children's show and three comedies soon. They've decided to crowdsource their efforts and let anyone submit scripts to be turned into TV shows. The first four winners of those shows to be produced have been awarded $10,000 in options as a start for being selected. Now, we go back to what you were saying earlier, Missy, about your friend that's got the successful online
Yes.
thing. I mean, this would be perfect for him.
It's huge. And I think I do think that more and more companies are recognizing, with production values being what they are and things being so expensive to create, that if you can find a successful, for example, a successful web series, beautifully written, beautifully executed, really top notch, you're halfway there. That already has a following, already has some kind of name recognition. Why are we working so hard creating something from scratch when there's some really great content out there? Mm-hmm. So, now again, I think it's brilliant. I think it's the way to go. And I don't think that is going to change.
Sorry, go on, come on.
No, I was going to say that you know, we're at a time right now, be it photography, music, any of the arts are on fire. And everybody nowadays is a photographer, a filmmaker, a singer, a musician. The arts are just on fire. And people are realizing, you know, I don't need a contract. I can go out there and put it on YouTube. I can put it, you know, I can put it somewhere on a blog or a website. And I think people are seeing the real value of that in the arts. And so I think that all these, you know, all these production companies are now starting to, filmmakers are starting to recognize that and jump on board, which again is very smart of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know how much how much it costs him to produce his show whenever he does an episode, but like to proper media companies, we'll say, I use the word proper, $10,000 mm-hmm. probably doesn't sound that much, but would $10,000 to him?
No, that would no. I think for they will shoot. Enter the Dojo will shoot several episodes over the course of a weekend, a Friday through a Sunday, because they have a cast. They need to get together. Everybody does other things. They're all other actors, have other jobs going on. So when they can commit to a weekend, they pack it, and then they release then they edit it over the next however many months, and then they release them. You know, I don't know what their timetable is. But, you know, they're going to have the sound guys and the film guys and everybody's there in one location and they're going to work hard for 3 days. Nowhere close to $10,000 does it cost to do this. But really, look at a show like The Office, right? What do you have? Two cameras running? One guy with a boom? I mean, I don't think it's a very compared. Now it is, of course, if you're doing it on your own, but I think it's very labor intensive as far as the production for this kind of look, this kind of genre. I don't think it's that expensive to create. But again, as we'll get into with Prometheus, it's really all about the story, isn't it? And it's really all about clever writing and clever characters. Mm-hmm.
You mean how it used to be done?
How it used to be done. And again, we won't talk about Prometheus yet.
No, I don't even know what you're talking about. But do you think it's like a repertory theatre then? You think this is the idea of your friend and other people? Mm-hmm. They've got the skill, they've got the idea, they've got the enthusiasm. They're not being held back by somebody that says, no, it's not got the right look. It doesn't look like we've spent enough on it. Do you think this is so? Well, the trouble is, someone would come along, and this is what worries me. Someone would come along and say, "Here's £1 million, bugger off. We want to take the rights to everything you've done," and then they'll turn it into something which is exactly the same as everything that's ever been before.
Well, and I think that could certainly happen. I mean, I'm sure somebody could come up and say, "Hey, I love this. I want to buy this from you, or and I want to do it my own way because I saw you doing this. I saw your web series and it's great. And I think I can do that. And I have connections." Yeah, there's always that risk. Again, when you put anything online, you run that risk of, and then changing it just a little bit to make it yours, you know,
exactly.
But that's the risk you run, and it's the yin and the yang. And I think that the benefits far outweigh the risks. I mean, if you're making some, this is basically like The Office. It's kind of like a mockumentary. You know, where the actors are interviewed in between scenes. The production, I think the production value is high. It's very professionally done, but with minimum amount of labor, with people on it. So why not? I mean, why not do that?
But is this sort of the indie label You know, this sort of happened to music a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, before every kid could make a, you know, a song in the back room, it was people with a couple of guitars, a keyboard in a garage, and maybe even a reel-to-reel, but that was indie. It was
right.
The skill was still there, the passion, everything was still there. But what happened with a lot of the indie stuff, indie then became the mainstream. And mm-hmm. so the
right,
way you,
right.
the main, you mentioned The Office, it's like saying, well, I dare say the production values on The Office were very high and the writing was very good. But right. I dare say the costs to make something look like it didn't cost much were extraordinary.
Right.
That's my, well, I mean, it's not why I think Amazon, I don't think it's probably as altruistic as it seems to be. That's my sort of concern.
Well, and again, I mean, the internet, I'm preaching to the choir, but the internet, it has changed everything. There is no way in the past that you could put your product, your creativity in front of that many people basically for free. There is no way. And so now that it's here, you know, everyone's a songwriter and everyone is, you know, everyone's a movie maker. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying anything's wrong with that. I'm just saying that it is what it is. And so sometimes, I mean, you get a lot of yuck out there and you get a lot of, wow, why aren't these guys on, you know, why isn't this picked up by the Comedy Channel? This is brilliant. And so, I mean, there you have it. And again, it's not going to go away. And if you have people who are determined enough, I mean, I know on a show like Enter the Dojo, they have a lot of people that just donate their time and donate, you know, their services to make it happen because they believe in it. And could it be made better? Of course it could. Of course it could. Anything could be made better. Well, almost anything. But for now, I mean, I think if you took that and you put that on a network like the Comedy Channel, I mean, it would fit seamlessly, I think. And that could be said for a lot of shows.
No, I agree. I think this kind of funding from Amazon of things that haven't been gone through the system, we'll say, is the other subversive side to the attack on these big media companies. They're just seen as they're losing money. They cannot see these other smaller, independent people who do it like British Tech, who do it for the love of doing it. They don't require mm-hmm. any money. They're just doing it because they can suddenly do it. So they want to share. And I don't think media companies really understand. Well, what do you mean? How can you produce content and not want to get paid for it?
I mean, well, you have to. But see, I think that's a misnomer, though. You do it. You start out because you love it.
Mm-hmm.
But anything that is of quality takes time. I believe this. It takes time. And there reaches a point where you kind of go, listen, okay, we need to even these independent filmmakers go, oh, okay, we need to do something here. We need to get picked up or we need to get advertisers. Because you do it for the love, and the love keeps you doing it, and the creativity keeps you at it.
Absolutely.
But I think that there could be a point where, especially when you've got a pretty big crew working on something. Mm-hmm. I mean, you need everybody on all hands on deck. And if somebody isn't because of whatever, then it suffers. So they have to be of one mind.
Absolutely, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is, there's no longer a guy sitting in an office smoking a cigar that says, "Okay, you're due. We'll fund you." There's multiple ways of being funded.
Exactly,
now,
exactly, Madden.
Plus, you can't smoke indoors anymore.
Oh. Russ, yeah. You got anything to say on it before we move on?
No, I think it's brilliant. If they want, I mean, if they can stumble on, let's say, the next office, that'd be amazing.
just probably go down the corridor and knock. That's how you get to the next office.
Oh,
yeah. Ba-dum-tish. No, what I meant was if they accidentally trip over the next big thing, then it's, you know, all of these you know, companies like, you know, Love Film and Netflix has already done it. They're gonna be doing the same thing.
True. So mm-hmm. now we get back to the old system. Apparently Jurassic Park 4 has found new writers. Now, who's excited about this?
I am so excited about this.
And why would that be?
Because I love Jurassic Park, Carl.
Now, do you love Jurassic Park 1 and 2 and we won't mention 3? Or,
you know, my problem with 3 is how clean Taya Leone stays. She's wearing a pastel pink shirt and white pants and she's running from dinosaurs, and the woman is cleaner than me after lunch. Do you know, it's just, come on.
Only you would spot that.
Me of the, oh God, that dripped on my clothes. Yes. No, I think three was okay. But see, I think that from what I read, three was made much the same with Indiana Jones. Three was made because two was not what they wanted it to be. And I could be wrong, but I do remember reading that. But most people, I think Jurassic Park 2 is the least favorite of the trilogy.
Oh, I don't know. I quite like that. It's going to be written, apparently, Jurassic Park 4, by the same writers that wrote Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Rick Jaffa and Amanda Silver. Now, I thought that was a fantastic film, Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
I did too.
So maybe. I mean, Spielberg's not directing it. He's only producing it. So it might lack his touch. Unless you're one of those people that think he's lost his touch recently. But yeah.
I don't know. I'm, you know, anytime we can see dinosaurs, it's a good time, isn't it?
Unless it's Barney.
Unless, well, we could work him in there. That'd be fun. Yeah. I'd pay to see that.
Are you looking forward to these, Alex and Russ?
Well, you know, it's, I think I've seen it. I saw it, you know, I think I saw it, but it had Taya Leone in it, so I don't even remember any dinosaurs.
I'm not excited for this at all.
No?
I've seen the first one. I haven't seen the second one or the third one. To be honest, it sounds like I'm not missing anything when I say I've missed the third one. Perhaps I'll see the second one.
Well, the thing is, when it did come out, the first one was as much about the, wow, they've made dinosaurs look like real dinosaurs.
It was the effects.
Yeah, and the story was, let's face it, the story was crap.
Yeah.
And, you know, then we had Walking with Dinosaurs, a TV series that made Jurassic Park look like a cartoon. And so the technical thing was blown out of the water. That's the trouble. I'm going back to it. I sound like a rig playing record. So many of these things, they base the outcome, they base what they want on the effects that they can put into it. If they'd only spend a little bit more time with actually a storyline, and maybe, you know, Taya Leone, fine. You know, but actually put some story into it, you know? Some of the greatest films you'll see. I mean, that sounds really pretentious, but a lot of the foreign films that win an awards because of they're based in an industry where the storytelling is far more important than the effects. And it almost takes it being a foreign film. Look, we're not making a film in English, so we know it's not going to have mass appeal. If it's not going to have mass appeal, then let's make it the best written piece of work we can possibly make it, and the best acted piece of work we've got to take it. But in a funny way, as soon as you make it English, which makes it mass production, those ethics go out the window, and it's who can make the shiniest dinosaur.
But see,
I would agree with dinosaur. That on 2 and 3, but on Jurassic Park 1, only because I was a big Michael Crichton fan, still am, and I really enjoyed the novel prior to seeing the movie, which is, if there's a book, I'm going to read it before I see the movie, always. And I liked the idea of, just because we can do something with science, should we do it? I loved that core idea.
Yeah, but that was a fly sort of thing, wasn't it?
Okay, well, you had to find a way, but I'm just saying that on a bigger whole, and all of Crichton's books, kind of, that's always the theme, you know, just because we can, should we? And you know, we screwed it up before we knew what we had, kind of thing. So I kind of agree with that with the first one. But then, you know, I know 2 and 3, they started to lose their way. It just became a, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a Titanic sort of thing, you know. Let's face it, it's a pretty good story, the Titanic, and it was always going to have a pretty emotional end, you know? I mean, okay, we all know how it was going to end, but it was, you know, it's a good story. You know, if you just think of it as an historical story, it's a very good story. But they throw so many layers of rubbish on top of what is a really good story that it became something that, in a funny way, was almost passé by the end of it. You know, and it could have been so much more, but they just don't seem to be able to get that balance between. I mean, I imagine when James Cameron, I mean, obviously he didn't read the story, he maybe read a screenplay or something, and, you know, I imagine he he saw a core of something. But like I say, they throw so much rubbish on top of things that it, most the time, I mean, you're going to get onto your favourite film in a minute, but most of the time, the substance gets lost because of it. And I just really, really am a firm believer in if you have to cover something with, you know, it's like making a really, really bad cake. You know, if your sponge has gone, it's split and everything, if you put enough chocolate icing around the outside, it will still look good. But intrinsically, it's a knackered up cake. You know, I think that's what they sort of do with a lot of these films.
Only you, Alex, could have jumped from Jurassic Park to Titanic, that's what.
And then knackered up cake.
Now you
are the Segway. You are the Segway master, I tell you. So the Jurassic Park 4, that is in still pre-development. Now, one that's coming out, one film that's coming out very soon and has got my geek, the geek inside me very happy indeed, is the new Judge Dredd movie, and the teaser's been released. Carl Urban, who played McCoy in the recent Star Trek reboot, is the title of Judge Dredd. If anyone that doesn't know, Judge Dredd was a comic, a lawman, in the 2000 AD comic over in the UK, and he exists in Mega City 1, and that exists in a post-apocalyptic America where they've sectioned everyone into these giant cities on both sides of the coast, and crime is rampant, and these judges try and keep the law in check, and it judge, jury, and executioner. Obviously, everyone knows probably about Stallone's effort a few years ago, where it broke the cardinal rule of any Judge Dredd movie, and that is he took his damn helmet off. Judge Dredd has never taken his helmet off, I'm aware. I think he did once, but he had his back to the panel, so you couldn't see what his face was like. Anyone looking forward to this movie?
I would be if it wasn't in 3D.
Yeah. I watched the trailer just before we started, and it doesn't... I'd be interested to see it, but I want to know why Carl Urban is doing that Christian Bale Batman voice.
What, you mean like this?
Yes, that one.
Because you couldn't have...
Well done, Missy. That was really good.
was... You couldn't have Judge Dredd with a normal voice. He is the staunch, gritty lawman. So you need that sort of Clint Eastwood gravelly voice sort of thing.
Get Clint Eastwood to do it.
I can't. In fact, back in the old days, because the comics gone on for so long, Clint Eastwood would have been the perfect actor. I think vaguely remember somewhere reading that the creator had sort of Clint Eastwood in mind when he developed the character. That might just me being confused, though.
Confused as a newt again, are you?
Yeah, probably. But I, for one, am really looking forward to this film, so... 7th of September it comes out over here in the UK. Oh, unfortunately, Missy, 21st September for you American folks. We get it first.
Oh, well, you always get them first. Always.
That is a new trend, actually. We seem to be getting films before our American cousins. Now, I'm not quite sure why that is, but...
Maybe we're like the test screening. if it doesn't work, there's not so many people to annoy and they can pull it.
Well, it is risky because if we see it and we slate it, then... The biggest demographic, I should imagine, for paying for movies is going to read a load of negative reviews. So
yeah, but I mean, I think what do those limeys know?
Well, maybe. Yeah. So anyone going to see this? I mean, I am definitely.
I'll go with you just to keep you company.
Fair enough.
If I can find people,
I don't know.
If I can find people to go 3D with.
Oh, but you won't have to see it in 3D. They won't make you. I won't hold a lawgiver to your head. A lawgiver was their gun, by the way.
Really? It's available not just in 3D? It's in regular D?
It will be in regular D as well, I'm sure.
Just close one eye, you'll be fine.
Yeah. Take a couple Dramamine. I'll be fine.
Finally, before we move on to our spoiler zone area, Russell had a little play with the new podcasting app from Apple. What do you make of it?
Well, I quite like it.
Okay, then. Thanks for that.
You want to know why, don't you? You want to know why? Well, because it splits off podcasts from the main iTunes app that's on the iPod and the iPhone, and it's a better way to present them, I think, because you've got this kind of it's almost like a radio. They've mixed a radio with a tape deck. So what you do, you've got a main section with all these bits. You've got technology, TV and film, sports, recreation, society and culture. And let's say if I pick under technology, you've got tech news. You've got stuff like Quit, The Verge, British Mac, friend of the network, and of course most importantly, you've got the British Tech Mac Show.
Good stuff.
It's all big logos and everything. So you just tap the little eye next to it, and then you play it, and it comes up with this tape deck, and starts playing your podcast.
They're doing that thing again where they're done with the calendar, where it looks like a leather bound book with a little page missing.
Yeah, it's skeuomorphism is the word. That's the word you're looking for. And they've actually done something quite nice, but it's a bit obscure. So if you start playing it, the tape is full on one side, like it would be on a real tape deck, and you press play, the tape starts going round. It goes down on one side and it fills up on the other.
Okay.
Yeah. That's nice, isn't it? The one thing I was disappointed.
Why?
Because people like it.
Okay. I think.
But the one thing I was a bit disappointed is that you can't scrub the you can't do what you can with a real tape deck. Or you can't move the tape and it goes vroom, you know. Doesn't do that. But one of the useful things it does do is it picks up all of the podcasts that are currently in your iTunes library on your device. So you don't have to go and download them all again, it picks them all up again.
Okay.
So are you gonna try?
Would you recommend anyone try it out?
Would I recommend people try it out?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, because this is gonna be the way that you will get podcasts from now on.
Okay.
Because this is Apple replacing the iTunes podcast section, because it's gone from iTunes on iOS 6. This will be the new way to get podcasts.
I will check it out, but I think from the sound of it, I'm still going to stick with Downcast, but we'll see.
Yeah, there's loads of other podcast applications available.
So. Okay, so just before we wrap up, let's move on to what we've been watching. Now, me personally, I've watched The Dark Knight on Blu-ray because I'm getting ready for The Dark Knight Rises, which I'm very looking forward to that. I've gone back and watched loads of episodes of Seinfeld on DVD because I just love that show, a show about nothing. and also Netflix, I've watched The Nutty Professor, the classic Jerry Lewis film, and also a documentary on Netflix, Lost in La Mancha. Mancha, I think that's the...
La Mancha.
La Mancha.
La Mancha.
And what that's about is Terry Gilliam trying to bring Don Quixote to do the film, and it's a documentary about him trying to get this vision of a movie he's had for 10 or 20 years, and it is just disaster after disaster after disaster. And it's soul-destroying to watch him have to go through all these things, but it's fantastic viewing entertainment. Ooh. I have to say. But it's really good, and it still gets lost in Netflix. But if you just search for Terry Gilliam or Lost in La Mancha, or whatever it is, it's really good fun. It's really good entertaining viewing. Russ?
For the last couple of years, I've been a fan of a progressive rock band called Frost. And the main guy behind it is a guy called Jem Godfrey. And he does what he calls Frost Reports about stuff that's going on with the band. And when they did their second album, he was recording videos and posting them to YouTube all through recording the album. And you can still get them at youtube.com/planetfrost. And if you're a musician and you like progressive rock music and you like a very, very good keyboard player messing around and recording an album, then it's just a really, really good thing to watch. I re-listened to it because they've got a new album coming out soon.
Good stuff. And where did you find that? Where's that? Where can people find that?
youtube.com/planetfrost, all one word.
Excellent. Missy?
Well, I'm a huge, huge, huge Arrested Development fan. Huge.
Are you huge by any chance?
Well, I like it a little bit. They are getting ready to, they've gotten the green light to create 9 more episodes to Netflix only, which will culminate in a movie. And I'm like a kid on Christmas morning. I'm so excited. It is my all-time favorite TV show. It was short-lived. It was brilliant, brilliant. And so I've been kind of going through, I mean, it's kind of sad because I know, you know, whole episodes by heart. But I've been watching that, and kind of in the same vein, can you see a theme here? I have been going back over 30 Rock, and watching those are really nice to watch because they're laugh out loud funny. They stand alone and they're really only 22 minutes. If you watch them on, you know, like Netflix, mm-hmm. It's 22 minutes. You can watch it, be done. So those are the TV shows that I am currently watching.
Over here, I think we can get Arrested Development on Netflix and 30 Rocks on iTunes over here.
Oh, yes. So you can get them both on Netflix here.
Mm. Oh, right, okay.
Mm-hmm. And oh. Breaking Bad as well. Breaking Bad is another.
That's on they're Netflix, ready. Here.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're getting ready to start their shooting their final season. I believe it starts in July. So excellent, excellent, excellent show.
Good stuff.
I'm a fan of good writing. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Alex.
Yep.
Okay, just to keep up the persona of being a miserable git, the only things I've watched that I haven't been made to watch lately is I've watched the Alfred Hitchcock version of Jamaica Inn, the Daphne du Maurier novel. Fantastic bit of filmmaking. It's out of copyright, which is great, so you can actually look it up and you can stream it. It's free and it's legal. Because it's out of copyright, and that's one of the nice things about watching old films. And because of a conversation I was having actually with Russ a little while ago, I went back to start watching some of my Chaplin films again. And the one I've sort of watched this week was Modern Times. And I personally love that film because of if you don't think of Chaplin as a comic, you think of him as a dramatic actor, and then you'd sort of read the real story behind, there's no words obviously, you read the real story about what he's saying. He had one of the loudest voices in the world and he never spoke. And I think he's underrated because of people think he was a clown or he was a tramp. He wasn't. He was a political, he was a social speaker. He said far more than any politician has said before and since. So I would advise people, watch the Chaplin film. Again, there's quite a few of those you can watch free as well. But watch Chaplin films and think of them more of a social comment than a comedy, and you might find you pick out more than you realised.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, you know, Chaplin, you can't go wrong with Chaplin. That's all I say.
Mm-hmm.
Classic. This show and every other show on the network is brought to you by UK2.net. They really do keep British Tech News, going strong. If you can show your appreciation to us by buying something from them, we'd be most grateful. If you just go to our website, BritishTechNetwork.com, and scroll down to UK2.net's link, any services you buy from there, just go through, fill your cart up, and then if you want to use these voucher codes, you'll get some discounts. I'll just run through them. If you use British Tech DNS, you'll get free DNS for up to 2 years. If you use British Tech Domains, you'll get 20% off domain registration. British Tech VPN, you'll get 50% of your first month of VPN. If you have British Tech Server, £50 of any gigabit server on any contract length. However, that's an online deal only. You can't ring up and get that one. British Tech VPS, first month free when purchasing an entry-level VPS system. They really are wonderful, and they've been with us for over 3 years now, and they just keep us going. So, guys, before we get into our spoiler area, where can we get hold of you, Alex?
You can get me at Alex G. Fox on Twitter.
Fantastic. Russ?
You can get me on Twitter at SF Drummer.
Good stuff. And Missy?
You can get me on Twitter, and I will not say the entire address, Madden, but you can get me on Twitter at Missy Mwack or MissyMwack.com.
Good stuff. My name's Carl Madden. You can get me on Twitter at Claw0101. You can also get me on the show as Worlds Apart and sometimes the photo show when work allows me. Also on App Chat, also on the network, where I talk to iPhone developers. All good stuff. So that's the first show of the media show. Now, if you want to hear the spoiler reviews of Prometheus, hang around after the credits, and we're going to spoil the heck out of that movie. But if you don't, make sure you stop the podcast now. Okay, guys? So thanks for joining us. See you next time. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, goodbye.
So, anyone that's left now wants to hear our spoilers of Prometheus. If you don't want to hear them, stop the player now.
All right, then. I'll see you later, guys. It's been nice.
Now, Alex, you haven't seen it, have you? So.
I've got no intention of ever seeing it.
Smart move, Alex.
Right. Who wants to start? Russ, what do you think, Prometheus?
What do I think of the film?
Yeah. Because I've started to change my opinion since I've watched it and thought about it more. My opinion's changed. I mean, I still think it's got some lovely eye candy in it. It's still shot well. The scenes are great. And the whole setup, the whole way the film looks is fantastic. It's Ridley Scott at his best.
Yeah, it's basically how to shoot a space horror film, which is like Alien. Shot amazingly well, and it's an extremely good film. But why have you changed your mind?
Well, we'll go through them. First of all, let's Missy have her say.
How long do I have, Madden? I am a huge, huge Alien franchise fan. I endure 1, 3, and 4. 2, to me, is a perfect movie. James Cameron at his best. Ridley Scott obviously only directed the first Alien movie, which was kind of like the first Star Trek movie in that it lacked depth and it lacked really character involvement. As an audience, we really didn't care what happened to the characters. It was just like, let me see the monsters. By the time we got to Aliens, the second one, it was directed and written in such a way that we were invested in the characters, these, you know, BA Marines, and you cared about them, and it was snappy dialogue. There was a storyline. Again, it was the whole right and wrong of it all. It was great. It was fantastic. 3 and 4. Yeah. When I heard Prometheus was coming out, I saw this on the trailer on the Super Bowl. I jumped out of my skin, could not wait, saw it opening weekend, and I wept when it was over because I was so betrayed by Ridley Scott. It was such a wasted, there was so much wasted potential. It was like, I tell people, it's like the writers just were sitting at the table going, you know what, guys, we've run out of ideas. Let's just throw something on the paper and go eat, because there is nothing. It was almost like the goal was, let's just get to the next cool scene of graphics rather than letting us just care and understand the characters. It made no sense. I think half the story ended up in the editing room. I mean, we see one of the main characters, Guy Pearce, is an old man. It's obviously a young character with made to look aged. We never see him young.
That's true. But do you know where he does appear young?
Where?
In the viral
trailer.
Campaign. In the viral campaign.
In the trailer, which makes
no sense to then bring him in and put him in, which I, you know, when I think back, when I saw it, I thought, that's terrible makeup.
Yeah.
You had the whole, everything looked wonderful, but then you looked at Guy Pearce and you thought, okay, that's a young guy in old makeup, full stop.
You know, the only people you care about in this movie is the female lead, who I thought was pretty darn good, and the gal who was in A Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, and the android. But even the android's motives, why is he trying to kill everyone? We have no idea. And I wanted him to. I wanted David just to slaughter the lot of them, because I was so, at that point, I just thought, you know, when you've got the, hey, I'm a scientist, so I don't know what this snake creature is, but come here, let me touch you. It was so unbelievable.
See, my problem, I come up with, me when talking in the pub with my mates. See, we started off, it was weird, because we started off, we went, oh, yeah, it's a good show, it's good. And then as the night went on and the beers increased, we suddenly went, yeah, but hang on. And one of them, like, we'll just run through. So Let's make off this big... I say at the beginning, Waylon's probably dead by the time they see this, after watching the hologram. But then he comes back to life near the end, and no one seems surprised by this. It's just like, oh, you're alive now. Okay.
Why didn't
you come out early? Anyway, so that's one thing. It was only when they knew about all those other finds from the past, but it's only when they found one on the island, I think it was Skye, where they uncovered that thing. They thought, oh, well,
right,
that's enough. That's enough information now. We can go off into space. Even though they knew apparently already about all the other ones.
But I'm even okay with that. I can do it. I'm okay with that. What I can't take is the lack of character development. The characters that are there for no reason. The boyfriend who really doesn't do anything remotely scientific, or he's not even worthy of being on that ship, and then he turns to a raging alcoholic as long as there's no surviving aliens to communicate with.
That's the thing. He does all that research, he goes all that way in the space, and as soon as he gets there and says, oh, there's no aliens here, I'm going to get drunk and become an arse now.
Yeah, you just got there. Look around, buddy.
And you had a geologist and a botanist, I think it was, and they sort of encounter, they go to an alien planet. Now, I don't know how many alien planets they've been to previously, but they don't seem that impressed by the fact they've discovered alien, what do you call them? These alien structures. And the first thing they want to do, as soon as they actually find an alien, okay, granted, dead, they want to go, I want to go away now. I want to go away, and I want to get lost in this structure that we've just mapped.
It's just about the visual effects and eating buttered popcorn, because that's what I chalked the whole evening up to. When the best line of dialogue that these writers who were paid a lot of money to sit in Hollywood and write came up with was when the android asked the female lead, saying, "I don't understand," and the line is, "Well, it's because I'm a human and you're a robot." I laughed out loud in the theater. I mean, it just turned into a comedy at that point. So I cannot tell you how upset I am still over Prometheus.
Russ, you got anything to how you doing? You've been very quiet. Sorry.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, and I'm still thinking. I'm thinking back on it and thinking, well, yeah, but you know, the reason no one's really surprised that Waylon isn't dead is because David is talking with him.
But
throughout the film.
We know that. We know that, the viewer. But then the guys on board don't know that. They never see him doing that. It's only we are given that thing. But when he comes back at the end, you've got those guys helping him out and the guys walking with him as he puts on that assisted walking frame thing.
Mm.
And none of them seems the captain sees him, the other crew see him, and no one says...
Yeah,
you
but there are other guys. There are other guys there, who are only looking after him, aren't there?
Okay, but even the woman comes back in after that weird surgery thing she does on herself. She comes in and she sees him and she goes, huh. And that's it. It's no like, what the hell?
Yeah, I think. Well, you'd be a bit dead to the world after you'd just had a machine cut something out of you, wouldn't you?
Well, no, apparently not, because a few moments later, she's like hauling a body down a sudden drop, and that doesn't seem to bother her. And in movie times, it's like 30 minutes later.
Yeah, that point's been made before,
yeah.
And I think that machine would have some kind of mechanism for. Those staples have probably got painkillers in them and, you know, some kind of dermal regeneration.
So you're doing what I used to do, and that is you're defending the world. You're defending the movie. I used to do that. I do that with certain films that people don't like and I love. You feel you have to defend it and come up with a plausible reason.
I'm not defending it. I'm just thinking of it as a sci-fi film.
Well,
I think if all I had seen was Prometheus, I would just say, okay. But having everyone is going to hold that up to Aliens. And when was Aliens made? Early 90s? No.
Eight.
It was like 85, 86, right?
Yeah.
Well,
late 80s.
Early 80s. Yeah.
Early
and 80s. When you watch like Alien and Aliens, I watched them after watching this. And I just thought, you know, this thing is still holding up. It's still, just like Alex was saying, a good story is a good story. And... these are still, Alex is going, I never said that was a good story. But to me, a good story is a good story. And when those older movies have stood the test of time, I mean, Prometheus is like, whatever. No, it was a huge betrayal, a huge disappointment. And I drank a lot the night I saw it.
Oh. I mean, we can hope. We can hope that there will be a director's cut that comes out when it
but
comes
I was just
DVD.
About to say, I will reserve judgment until I've seen the director's cut.
Okay, and it's always the case with Ridley Scott. There's a director's cut.
Yeah, but there might be a miss. Yeah. There might be a missy cut, and it'll only be 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
So hearing all this
with a bottle of vodka or something with it to get
yeah, that'll be cut. That'll certainly be cut.
Hello.
So Alex, hearing all this, are you tempted to go and see Prometheus?
No, I think I'm tempted to go and get my eyes gouged out just in case I ever walk past somewhere where it's on in the window.
Good man, Alex G. Fox.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, entertainment is for enjoyment. And if something needs so much debate, it probably isn't that good.
If you have to explain it, it's not good. That's
yes, it's like so many things in life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guys, so we got... Russ obviously likes it. I liked it initially, and then as soon as I thought about it a bit more, my thoughts turned to, and Missy was straight away.
And I'm with Missy. Just women's intuition and all that.
Oh, I tell you what, if you have eyes and ears, you just watch it and go. In what universe is this good?
Well, I'm sure we can do the same again when The Amazing Spider-Man comes out in a couple of weeks.
Oh, I'm sure we will. I probably won't, but I'm sure you'll get an earful, Madden.
I'm in the spoiler zone.
Yes.
Spoiler area. Okay, guys, thanks for joining us. Like I say, if you want to write anything in, the address is on our website. But if you want to contact us on Twitter, we mentioned them earlier. Mine's Clausio101. Anything you want to send through, greatly appreciated. So, thanks, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.